The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. I'm telling Raj, my producer in L.A., I'm in New York, Raj is in L.A., Brendan's in Connecticut. Engineer, I mean, we're all in different places. These are the COVID days still. But anyway, you know, my age exercise a little bit. Even on the 47 years old on the elliptical, my back went out for a month. So, you know, little by little, I'm getting back. Raj calling me fat. Here's the question. After all the worry, right? The worst defense of all time. Are the Nets the best team in basketball? The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Nets have the second best record in the East. It's after a pretty slow start. And the best record against teams above 500. Whoa. Even before they were playing any defense at all, because their defense has gotten better. I don't know what defense means. Defense. Their defense has gotten better. But even before they're playing any defense at all, you noticed the Nets were beating good teams. They lost to the bad teams. They weren't paying attention, but they were beating good teams. And since Kyrie and James Harden had that talk, Kyrie said, okay, you're the point guard, I'm the shooting guard. They've been impossible, and that's without KD. Ooh, they're scary good. First Eastern Conference team to win five straight on a Western Conference road trip, not this year, not since last year, oh, they were in the bubble last year, or 2018, or 17, or 16, or 15, or 14, or 13, or 12, or 11. They're the first Eastern Conference team to win five straight on a Western Conference road trip since 2010, and they beat the Lakers, and they beat the Jazz, and they beat the Clippers. Ooh. It's a problem. It is a problem. Do you remember, and Lakers fans, I'm curious to hear about this from you, because I felt like, you know, when the Nets traded for James Harden, people were wanting to take the pulse of the Lakers. The Lakers worried. And Lakers like, yeah, we're worried about us. We're worried about them. And I think a lot of Lakers fans, and listen, insofar as I root for a team from New York, it's the Nets, not the Knicks. I was a Knicks fan for almost 40 years. I traded in my Knicks card when I moved to L.A. Oh, I got to be a Lakers fan? Awesome. But Lakers fans, and I count myself as one, were not too worried about the Nets. James Harden didn't look good. And Kyrie Irving, who knows what he was going to be this season? And KD's coming off an injury, and they had to really thin out the roster in order to get James Harden. First, Dinwiddie gets hurt. Then LeVert and Jared Allen are in the trade to go get you James Harden and all those draft picks. And it's like the Lakers are like, hey, we have a well-oiled machine. And by the way, Lakers are elite offensively and elite defensively. They're the only team absolutely elite both ends of the floor when AD is there. And forget about their record without AD, which is not bad, right? They played a lot of bad teams without AD. Point is, they were like, yeah, we're not worried about the Nets. And I think everyone kind of felt that, yeah, you don't have to worry about it. You got to worry about the Nets now. That's real. Let's just be honest. They're not dead last all time in defensive efficiency anymore. And their offense is only going to get better. And by the way, this was all without Kevin Durant, who is clearly and by far the best player on the team. And that's saying something, because James Harden, ever since day one in Brooklyn, it's almost like showing off. Even the selflessness is almost showing off. He reminds me of his old man game, his YMCA old fat man game. It's deadly. It's lethal. Triple-double with 30 points rolling out of bed for the Nets. And then since then, just he's given up shots. Unless the team needs him to take shots, then he's scoring. He's doing everything right. But KD is a whole different. You know, KD is better than James Harden when they're both at their best. And Kyrie is, this is really the ideal role for Kyrie. Because, yeah, he can run the point, but he's a score-first guy. And his scoring ability, everyone's talking about Harden's scoring ability. Harden doesn't shoot the three better than Kyrie. Harden doesn't shoot the free throws better than Kyrie. Harden doesn't have a better mid-range than Kyrie. Harden doesn't finish in the paint better than Kyrie. Actually, as a pure scorer, as much love as Harden gets, Kyrie, by the numbers at least, percentage-wise, is a better scorer. In the eyeball test, Kyrie's more spectacular. Kyrie has the best package of layups in the history of the NBA. Best under-the-rim finisher ever. This is what Kyrie Irving had to say at the press conference following the Nets' win against the Los Angeles Clippers.
For the time being, winning six in a row, all it does is just keep the world silent for a little bit and then, you know, wait until we kind of hit a bump in the road and then it's what's going on with the Nets. So I think we just take both polarities and just stay the course. And the destination is making it to that main stage and earning our way there first and foremost. You know, it's nothing's given. So, like I said, we're just going to continue to enjoy the journey.
I mean, here's the other thing. Don't look now. You looked at LeBron's PER. LeBron has played all world this season. And every year he plays is uncharted territory. Because no one in the history of the game, including Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, ever played this many NBA minutes, run this many NBA miles, and been anything near the best player in the game. It was pretty obvious after the finals last season, LeBron was still the best player in the game. His PER right now, it's just offensive efficiency, is the lowest since his rookie season. Doesn't feel that way, right? When a guy starts to slip a little, it's imperceptible at first. You don't even realize it. But LeBron, is he going to have to do more now that KD is out for a long time? I talked about what he has to do on the offensive end. The defensive end. AD got to the team and challenged him to really play defense again. And he did it. But, like, how much can a 36-year-old who's, like, unprecedented, uncharted territory, no one's ever played this deep into their careers at this level? Is LeBron still the best player in the game? Or by the end of this season, are we going to be saying KD? I mean, the Lakers and the Nets look like they're on a collision course for the ages. Lakers fans, 888-SAY-ESPN. You weren't worried about the Nets at first. You're worried now. And by the way, I got to say quickly, that was a bogus call on Kawhi. Harden was a dude grabbing, and then Kawhi did, and then Harden flopped at the end of that play, and they called Kawhi for the offensive foul. Come on. And that was also, like, not only did the Nets win under those circumstances, but they're on the road. But Paul George, who'd scored 12 points in 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, was sat at the end of the game for minutes restriction. And look, I'm all for being careful about Paul George's minutes. You want to be careful, period. But a couple of minutes one way or another is not going to make a difference. Not in a high-leverage game where maybe you want to send a message and a guy's really hot. An extra 90 seconds, 120 seconds in the game ain't going to kill you. So the Nets did beat a shorthanded Clippers team, and they got a call. But again, they did it without KD, their best player, and that was Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Was Carson Wentz a bust in Philly? We asked that on First Take today, and Stephen A. took exception with what I said, of course. It's the name of the game. We debate. But, because, you know, like a bust is like, you know, who's up? Anthony Bennett when Cleveland took him number one overall. And no, that's not Carson Wentz. But if you ask, was Carson Wentz boom or bust? Like, was he a bust? I'm going to get to that in a second. Wentz had a message for the city of Philadelphia on his way out the door. What a journey to the city of Philadelphia. Thank you. On the field, we brought the Lombardi Trophy home to Philadelphia and hopefully brought a lot of joy to the city over the years. Thank you to the Eagles organization for drafting me and making my NFL dream come true. Here's the thing. Carson Wentz, when you ask if he's a bust, you have to ask yourself, look, obviously the Eagles aren't going to redo the last 5 years because they won a Super Bowl. And Wentz contributed in the sense he gave him a very good record in the regular season. But I'll remind you, he didn't win a single playoff game. It was Nick Foles who did that in the playoffs. Nick Foles won Super Bowl MVP over a Tom Brady who threw over 500 yards in that game. Nick Foles took over a team that Carson Wentz was quarterbacking the following year. That was 5-6. Same team. Nick Foles, they caught fire. They made the playoffs. Carson Wentz handed him a really good record. Nick Foles won the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz handed him a bad record. Out of the playoffs, 5-6. Nick Foles had the team catch fire, made the playoffs, and then Nick Foles beat a Bears defense at Soldier Field, no less, that was considered the best in the business, and then went to New Orleans and almost beat New Orleans. You know, the receiver turns his head, and maybe they beat New Orleans that game because Wentz put it in his hands. That was, sorry, Foles. Foles put it in his hands. That was all Foles. None of that was Wentz. Wentz didn't win a single playoff game his whole time. And you have to consider this when you ask about it being a bust. What did they do to get him? What did it cost them? Okay, I looked it up because I didn't even remember the extent of it. I remember it was a first and then something else. And they had the 8th overall pick in the draft. They wanted to move up to the 2nd pick in the draft because L.A. was going to take Goff. In order to do that, they traded the 8th pick that year, a 3rd that year, and a 4th that year. They also got back like a 5th rounder in the deal, but they traded their 8th pick, a 3rd, and a 4th that year. The following year, they traded a 1st, and the following year, a 2nd. So that's the 8th overall pick among 2 first rounders, 2 firsts, a 2nd, a 3rd, and a 4th. To get Carson Wentz, and then they paid him $120 million. Okay, that's what they put in. You know what they got out of it? Wentz didn't win a single playoff game. Wentz undermined team chemistry this year. He started falling off in the middle of, well, really after his first great season in 17. He was never the same quite. He started, and by the way, in 2019, and I know Wentz is tough as nails. I was there at the Coliseum when he hurt himself, and he hurt his leg. Most guys would be off the field. He completed. He's very tough, and he had a lot of talent. But the fact of the matter is he was never the same after 17, and certainly not after the injury, and certainly not in the back half of 2019 when he got all this credit for being lucky to squeak by the worst division in football in the NFC East. And then to get out of the deal, you had to take a $30 million plus cap hit, and you traded him for a 2nd and a 3rd. So you gave up to get him 2 firsts, a 2nd, a 3rd, a 4th, and $120 million. And what you got back when it was time to trade him, because you had to trade him, he was killing you on the field, he was killing you off the field. What you got back was a 2nd, a 3rd, and a $30 million cap hit? Well, why? Of course that's a bust. Of course it is. By the way, what are the Cowboys going to do with Dak? Can Wentz turn it around in Indy? Is Big Ben done in Pittsburgh? I'm going to take your calls in a second. We're going to talk to Mike Tannenbaum a little bit later in the show. 888-SAY-ESPN. And I want to talk quickly. People want to talk about Wentz. People want to talk about the Lakers and the Nets. We're going to get to it. But I want to mention quickly that the New York Knicks are in the 7th seed for the playoffs right now. And look, there's reason for optimism in New York. And are they going to trade for Bradley Beal and everything, right? But I'll say this. It's one of the more interesting dynamics that I have seen in my lifetime watching sports. I can't quite remember a town with 2 teams in the same town where one was the national story. No one nationally cares about the Knicks. No one cares. And the other was a local story because everyone in New York seems to care about the Knicks still, or a lot of people do. Nationally, the Nets lead every show. Look around. The Brooklyn Nets lead every show nationally. And the Knicks lead shows locally in New York City. I can't remember that ever happening before. Like, the White Sox are the national story, but the Cubs are the local story? I don't remember that. Maybe in 05, when the White Sox won, was that the case in Chicago? That everyone still only cared about the Cubs, but the White Sox were making national headlines? I don't know. Was it the case that nationally people were paying attention to the Clippers, but people still really loved the Lakers in L.A.? The year that Blake and DeAndre were Lob City with Chris Paul and the Lakers were awful? I guess I was in L.A. at the time. We still led a lot with the Lakers, but boy, the Clippers were in there a lot. And nationally, of course, the Clippers were on highlight, you know, on SportsCenter and stuff because of all the highlights, and the Lakers weren't. So I suppose that dynamic was there in L.A., but maybe not like this. Like, the Clippers were not favored to win the whole thing. The Nets are leading shows consistently. And yet the Knicks, like, in New York, people still like to talk about the Knicks. Nathan in New York, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, I was wondering what your opinions are on what the Cowboys should do with Dak and in this offseason.
It's funny because we have these calls, and I take Nathan because I see he's from New York, so I think he's going to be talking about the Knicks and the Nets, and we get a Dak Prescott call. What's the question? What the Cowboys are going to do with Dak?
What do you think they should do?
Well, you got to give him his money now. You got to give him his money. Like, you know, they should have. This is what they should have done. The Cowboys, when Dak was making $2 million a year or whatever because he was a fourth-round draft pick and they had him on his rookie deal, instead of milking that to the very end of the contract and then seeing what his market value would be because it's near the top of the market now, instead of doing that, they should have given him an upper-middle-class quarterback contract when it was obvious that he was a franchise quarterback. Like, whether or not after a couple years it was obvious he was going to be great, because I don't know if he's great yet. He's very good. But it was obvious he was a franchise quarterback and a good player. He's a minimum. The floor for him was that Dak Prescott is good, at least. You mean to tell me when a guy is a couple years away from that contract and he's making $1 million or $2 million at the time and he's a fourth round pick, he ain't going to take 20 a year from a team? Why not? It's like in baseball when they buy out your arbitration. Why not start paying them now and then make the money back on the back end? They were greedy. The Cowboys wanted every drop of that rookie contract they could get, and they got it. And now, instead of signing them to a contract in the 20s or 30s, Dak's looking for 40. And let me tell you why he's going to get it. His franchise tag this year is 37. Last year's 31. That's almost $70 million. In 2 years, that's averaging 35. Next year, it'll be 50. Gets more expensive every time you do it. He's going to do $120 million in 3 years. There's your $40 million a year. So for that, they might as well give him the 40 a year he's looking for. He wants 3 years at 120. You're going to give it to him anyway, really. Yeah, they might as well, and I think they realize that. Mike in Atlanta, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, how you doing, man? That was some hell of a fight this weekend. I didn't see the upset coming with Burkholz, but hey, man, the young kid took it from him. But
are you talking about Burchelt? What Mike is talking about in Atlanta is Miguel Burchelt, junior lightweight champ, fought Oscar Diaz, featherweight, as standout, and Oscar Diaz moved up in weight. Sorry, did I say Diaz? Valdez, excuse me. Valdez moved up in weight and put on a master clinic. Oscar Valdez put on a master clinic. They were teammates on the Mexican Olympic team, or in the amateur team. And Burchelt always felt snubbed that Valdez had more of an amateur style. They preferred him, and so Burchelt didn't get a chance to represent his country in the Olympics and everything. But Burchelt was the heavy favorite, 3 or 4 to 1 to beat Valdez. And it was not expected that Valdez would knock him cold like that, but he did. You should check it out on ESPN Plus. Amazing highlights. Go ahead.
Yeah, that might be the knockout of the year right there in the 10th round. Yep. But look, if you leave, think about it, if you left Paul George in and something happened. He blew his ACL out or whatnot. Then everybody been saying, well, you should have kept him on his minutes restriction. Been a Laker fan since 1977. Concerned is the word I would use about the Nets. Not worried. Because you never know when Kyrie is going to say the world is flat and goes somewhere for 5 games again. Not worried about that at all. But
I don't know. It's all over the place. A lot of takes right there. First of all, I would say about Paul George, you can't run your franchise, you know, asking, will I be second-guessed for this decision if it goes wrong? That's just scared. And I'm not suggesting blow through his minutes restriction. I'm saying pick your spots. In a close game that's coming down to the wire against a potential finals opponent and Paul George is on fire, maybe a couple extra minutes wouldn't have hurt anybody. I don't really think it's any one game if you go over by 90 seconds or 2 minutes, some kind of restriction. I think it's an adding up if you do that consistently. But I do think you have to pick and choose your spots. At any rate, it's a regular season game, whatever. But there was the Paul George not playing at the end, and there was the bogus call against Kawhi. James Harden grabbed him. Kawhi really didn't foul him. And then Harden flopped, right? And so the call went against Kawhi. It shouldn't have. But, like, when you add it all up, KD wasn't even in the – KD didn't play. KD! Oh, the Nets are going to be a problem. How scared are you, Lakers? Listen, when that trade went through, I don't think most Lakers fans were scared. I think most Lakers fans felt cocky and felt confident. How are you feeling now, Lakers fans? Even if AD comes back healthy in a month, how are you feeling now about those Nets? Max Kellerman Show coming to you live from the Seaport District, the Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. Did we all overrate a certain head coach in the NBA? No Doubt is next. It's time for some straight talk. Your tax return could look different this year, but you're still going to hear a lot of noise about how you spend it. So when the big carriers tell you to splurge on the latest nonsense, just tune it out. With Straight Talk, you can get a Samsung Galaxy A51 for just $199. Plus, get the $45 unlimited talk, text, and data plan with no contract on America's best networks for up to 50% less. Tune out the nonsense. Tune in to Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. No Doubt coming up.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. How many quarterbacks are better than Cam Newton? Hear his answer in a second. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. See that issue, that situation with Cam Newton and the kid at his camp? Kid was mouthing off to Cam Newton, and Cam got defensive for a second, but then realized, gathered himself, like, this is a kid. Let me talk to your parent. It's embarrassing for everyone involved, especially the kid. No Doubt is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Let me get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No Doubt.
All right. What do we got?
All right, Max. First of all, take a listen to Coach Brad Stephen of the Celtics.
Listen, it's enough of a trend. It's enough of a concern. You know, we've got to stop it. You know, last year at this time, we were in really good shape in those moments. This year, we're not.
All right. Talking about those collapses late in games. Yep.
Yeah, they are struggling, man, the Celtics. But check it out. We all overrated Brad Stevens.
Nah, son. I mean, like, even if we overrated Stevens, that's not really what it's about. It's about roster construction. And Danny Ainge took responsibility for that. And really what it's about, because they don't have depth in terms of scoring. You know, like, they're guys that they've come up with, like, Williams is really good, right? What do they call him? Time Lord. Yeah, yeah. Like, well, he's good, but he's always defensively good. He's got value. Like, Tice has defensive value. Marcus Smart, defensive value. Their offense are the two wings. It's, you know, Tatum and Brown. And Kemba. If Kemba's healthy, that's a real big three scoring-wise. When Kemba is obviously not healthy, where else do they get scoring from? And that's the problem with the team. Is that Danny Ainge's fault? Is that Kemba's fault? Or is it bad luck that Kemba's hurt? That's it.
Okay. All right. Hey, happy birthday, Dr. J, Julius Erving. Remember the Fish in Pittsburgh movie? Anyway, hey, Dr. J is the best in-game dunker ever. In-game dunker.
Oh, it's so hard. Nah, son.
You remember that Cooper dunk? You remember the Cooper dunk?
I do, but I got to say Vince Carter, and I talked about this on First Take. Like, I know it wasn't in an NBA game. He jumped over Frederick Weiss, who's about 9 feet tall. He jumped over his head. You know, Vince Carter has some in-game dunks that are just absurd. Absurd. By the way, you know who else has some amazing in-game dunks? And people forget already, Blake Griffin. But Dr. J is right there with anyone.
Okay. All right. Hey, Cam Newton says there aren't 32 quarterbacks better than me.
No Doubt. No, I mean, the joke to tell there is, no, there are at least 35 or 36, right? But no, I think Cam Newton showed last year, coming off a catastrophic injury in a new situation with no practice because of COVID. He got COVID himself, like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Won 7 games and beat some good teams. No, I'm not ready to say that about Cam Newton. Not yet.
Okay. All right. Real quick before we get to some calls. Hey, Max, we'll have full NFL stadiums in 2021.
No doubt. I think
no doubt.
I think that by the summer-ish, if you get to what's the threshold for herd immunity? 70 or 75%? Seems like that's doable. And then you're not going to play football till after the summer. So yeah, if they're not full, they're going to be filled like differently than they've been recently. Yeah, I would say it's going to happen if I had to guess.
All right. That's it.
That's it. That's no doubt. I even have time for some phone calls. Look at this. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Gus in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, what's happening, Max?
Go ahead, Gus.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I think that the reason, even though the Nets have the loudest team, you know, the favorite team in the NBA, the Knicks, local fans, as long as we've been down, we still know they're really the Jersey Nets. But, I mean, we accept them to be from Brooklyn now.
Well, did you call them the Long Island Nets before they got to Jersey? Because in the ABA, they were the New York Nets. They played in Nassau County.
Right, they were the New York Nets, right. You're right. They were the New York Nets, and then they went to Jersey. When they went to Jersey, that's when I think we left them alone.
I'm saying, but I agree. I understand. That's why the Knicks ran unopposed. That's why they were able to operate as such a miserable franchise. But look what happened when the Nets come back to New York. All of a sudden, just like that, I'm snapping into the microphone, just like this. If you don't have ESPN Plus, I'm snapping right into the microphone, just like that. The Nets are a juggernaut. And what happened? Did the Knicks get better or worse? The competition made the Knicks better because Dolan realized he had to get out of his own way. He could not, you know, not running unopposed anymore. People have choices. Now you can't just have a toxic culture. And the Knicks look like they have a little mini renaissance. I mean, they're in the Eastern Conference, and at this moment, they're a seventh seed. We'll see if they even make the playoffs this year. But the Nets being awesome has been good for the Knicks. Just the Nets existing in New York, as opposed to Jersey, has been good for the Knicks. Competition's good. Mel in New Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
My man, Max, good work.
Thank you, brother.
So, you made a comment that LeBron is falling off, and I can't see how, because his shot got better, he still could bulldoze people when he drives to the lane. And the other day, he just did like four dunks in a game. Like, he's still flying high, man. And people don't love LeBron for his scoring. They love him for his passing. And that even got better, man.
Yeah, I'm not saying I see that. I'm not saying I see it. I'm not saying that. I was surprised to look. I was like, let's see what LeBron's up to. I just looked at his numbers for a minute because I would guess, oh, he's the MVP. Or Embiid is the MVP so far, but he's the best player in the game still, LeBron. And I looked. I was like, damn, his PER is below 24. You know, usually it's not a perfect stat, but usually MVP's, efficiency stats are John Hollinger's stat, you know, are over 27, 28, right? Once you get under 24, you're talking about an all-star, good player, very good player, but not an MVP caliber player. I was shocked, but there is a stat in baseball called isolated power. It's a pretty good indicator when a guy is going to fall off. It's a good, pretty good predictor of it. So the guy's slugging percentage and all that can look good, but if his isolated power drops suddenly, you're like, what's going on here? LeBron, I'm just wondering if there's some imperceptible slippage that we really can't see. Right, it's not easy to see, but it exists because it's showing up in the statistical profile. But I agree, I can't see it when I watch him play. Manuel in Los Angeles, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, I want you and the rest of the talking heads to round up the origami artist that made the paper rings for the paper champion Clippers and do the Clippers East New York Nets. Hey, man, they haven't won nothing. I'm with that brother who still calls them the Jersey Nets, because that's what I call them, man. What have they won, man?
Well, they haven't had
Kenny
a chance
Anderson
to yet.
DC ain't walking through that door, my man.
Well, they don't want them to. Listen, you know, just think about what the Nets just did. The first team, and I know there are some reasons. Paul George didn't play in the fourth quarter so much because of the minutes restrictions. Kawhi got a bogus call go against him. I get it. Of course, the Nets were playing without KD, and without KD, they go on a Western Conference road trip, play the best teams in basketball, and go 5-0 as the first Eastern Conference team to do that in 11 years? and they do it without Kevin Durant, but they ain't going to be without Kevin Durant for long. No. I'm not anointing the Nets like they already beat the Lakers. And I will tell you, the championship comes through L.A., goes through the defending champs. And I will also tell you, the Lakers are the only elite offensive and defensive team in basketball. And as of right now, AD's healthy, I'll pick the Lakers. But let's not pretend, Lakers fans, that we're not nervous now. Weren't nervous when the trade first happened with Harden. Don't front and act like you're not worried now. Did the Cowboys already blow it with Dak? I'll ask a front office insider, Mike Tannenbaum, of course. Coming up next, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so that you can save on both. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
This is put up or shut up for Carson Wentz and Frank Reich. Frank Reich, you're staking your career on this guy being what he was in 2017.
If they could just get him back to what we saw when he went 11-2 before he tore his ACL against the Rams, if they can get that guy back or the guy that we saw at the end of the 2019 season, they hit pay dirt.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Sam Darnold's still a Jet, but for how long? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline like Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN's front office insider. Mike, thanks for coming on as always.
Great to be with you, Mac.
Let's start. I was going to start with Dak, but you know what? Let's start with Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold, you know, like most quarterbacks to me, Mike, they fall into the category of with in the right situation. You know, most quarterbacks who can be good, they can be good. Look at Baker Mayfield. Four head coaches in basically two seasons. He's no good. He doesn't have stability. And then he gets the right guy and he looks really good. Darnold falls into that category. But certainly he's not like Patrick Mahomes is going to be great anywhere. Tom Brady, someone like that. How should people feel about Sam Darnold's future right now?
I was a Jets, I would move on and draft Zach Wilson. And over a three-year period, look at the consistent fifth most turnovers of any quarterback, and that's with missing a bunch of games. He has the same amount of turnovers as Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz has 20 more touchdown passes. I just feel like he may have some upside with a new system and hopefully better players around him. But if you looked at Sam Darnold and Zach Wilson back-to-back, Max, I think that comes out to the best decision for the Jet franchise is to go ahead and draft Zach Wilson.
What about Justin Fields? Because it occurs to me the Jets have a lot of draft capital. But if you can move back and pick up Justin Fields, who when the college football season started, he's 1B behind Trevor Lawrence, right? Then Zach Wilson comes on like gangbusters, at least on draft boards. And a couple of not great games by Justin Fields, he's like the forgotten man. What about Justin Fields?
I think he's going to wind up paying a little bit of a Ryan Day tax. And what I mean by that is, like, you go back to the Clemson game, Max, he played so well. But some of those players were so open. They have such a good scheme at Ohio State and better players. It's probably not unlike a little bit of what happened with Tua a year ago, where Tua threw to so many players that were wide open. I think Fields is really intriguing. I just have him a tick below where Wilson is. And the other question, and this is not a reason I wouldn't draft him, but a question I would want to have answered is, if he was so great, why did he have to transfer from Georgia? Kirby Smart's a really good coach. He couldn't beat out Jacob Fromm. And again, wouldn't be a reason why I wouldn't draft him, but I would want to drill down on that. But I still see Fields, when it's all said and done, being in the top five.
Yeah, although, you know, Fromm, not all that long ago, feels like a long time ago, was like, oh my God, is he going to be the best guy in the NFL eventually, right? Like, he was a very top kind of guy and wouldn't be the first guy who moved. But right, it's a question you'd want answered. Meantime, I'm curious as your point of view as a once GM. To me, the Cowboys were like kind of penny wise and pound foolish, talking to Mike Tannenbaum, former Jets GM, of course, and ESPN NFL insider on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. And they got him in the fourth round, and they're paying him a pittance by NFL quarterback standards. And rather than at a certain point saying, look, we know his floor is a very good quarterback. He's good. He's already good. He's a franchise quarterback. We'll see if he can be great. But Why not give him an upper middle class contract? You know, after a couple of seasons, kind of like in baseball, the way they buy out arbitration, I'm sure he would have taken in the 20s, you know, 2 years ago. And now it looks to me, Mike, like they're going to have to give him. He says he wants $40 million a year, 3 years. 31 and change last year, 37 this year. If they franchise him again, it's 50. There's your $120 million in 3 years. What other move do the Cowboys have? Aren't they going to have to pay him? And why wouldn't they have tried something more prudent a couple years ago?
Right, Max, I'm calling this a $50 million mistake because when they should have done it 2 years ago, when Zeke was holding out in Cabo and they rewarded him even though he had another contract, got Dak done roughly for about 32 to 30 when Goff and Rodgers were. Now that
Mike, you're breaking up. So, you're breaking up quite a bit. I'm just going to give you just a pause for a second. See if we can get that. See if we can get the signal turned around a little bit. But right. Wentz got paid. Goff got paid. And those are two guys in retrospect you shouldn't have paid. And I was wary of both those contracts. Why give Goff that deal now? Why give Wentz that deal now? And then the Eagles turned around and drafted a quarterback in the second round and then wound up trading Wentz a year later. And Goff, also, they give him the contract. They paid Gurley too early as well. And eventually with Goff, you had to include a couple of firsts and a third to get out of the contract and turn him into Matthew Stafford. Both seemed ill-advised. If anyone should have been signed to that kind of money, it was Dak Prescott in retrospect, and he's the only guy without a contract.
You're exactly right. And Max, I'm calling this a $50 million mistake because that market was $32, $33 million, which is where Goff went. Years were. Now that number's in a year. You're talking about a massive mistake,
Mike.
By
it's
Jerry
kind of
Jones, and you're
Mike. You're I'm dying to know what you're saying because every time you're like that contract was worth, and then you're cutting out. So like we don't get to hear any of the numbers, but I get the logic. I think what you're saying is when you do the math, it cost the Cowboys $50 million by being penny wise and pound foolish. The great Mike Tannenbaum, ladies and gentlemen.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.